So Coach Fritz is a scumbag, as it turns out. Jaden Daniels takes the Heisman, and the Saints beat the Panthers in front of a half-packed house in the Louisiana Superdome. All right, all that. This week's edition of Fasano Football. Here we go. All right, welcome to this week's edition of Fasan on Football. It's Mike Fasan here talking about the Saints, LSU, Tulane football programs. Of course, if you've listened to it before, you know what it's about. All right, let's just touch on Tulane real quick. You know, Tulane, neither Tulane nor LSU played any games, but a lot has been going on. Especially uptown on Tulane's campus where Willie Fritz took the Houston job and was up until now, and maybe I'm the only one that feels this way, but he kind of left a little, what I call a little scum around the bathroom, like a scum ring around a bathtub as he walked out the door, went to Houston. I mean, he took a shot at Tulane, kind of, talking about how their program or their facilities are inadequate, which is kind of a, it's not kind of, it's an absolute shot at Tulane, because, I mean, what he's doing there is he's laying the groundwork for future recruits, and telling anybody maybe considering Tulane, look, why would you go to Tulane? It's an hour flight to Houston, and we have this beautiful facility here. And Tulane's, you know, kind of archaic when it comes to their football facility, practice facilities, okay? And also, he left three assistant coaches. Now, this is the scumbag part, and I'm just going to say it. Willie Fritz had me completely fooled about the character he has. He left three assistant coaches behind, supposedly to help Tulane navigate the transition between, you know, coach leaving, coach coming, and road to the bowl game. But he had those three assistant coaches recruit existing Tulane players to go to Houston. To me, that's as gumball as you can get, scumbag as you can get. I mean, I'm sorry. He should know better. Now, I don't know whether that happened to him before, but I can tell you, when Coach Summerall took over and got wind of this, he put a stop to it immediately. And he made a strong statement about coaches who are going to Houston, yet remaining at Tulane and recruiting their players. I mean, they can go right now. They gotta go. So as I'm doing this podcast, three assistant coaches that were under Willie Fritz at Tulane have all left the Tulane program and they're headed to Houston. And kind of in shame. And to me, it puts a shameful light over the last few seasons that Fritz was here. When you talk about the class in which he exited, I thought he lacked a lot of class. He did not leave gracefully. And maybe he was upset because his guy wasn't selected as AD. But what if his guy gets selected as AD and he turns around and leaves for Houston anyway? There's no guarantee that would not have happened, especially when you hear him talking about the facilities and the money and everything and the recruiting talent available in the Houston area. So I just think it was a bad look. It was a classless act to badmouth your school on the way out leave assistant coaches behind to purge players that you want to follow you to University of Houston. Now, I don't know. Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma, went to USC, and lo and behold, his starting quarterback announced he was in the transfer portal and headed on out. But I don't know what the situation was, if Riley left assistants behind. Same with Kelly at LSU. I'm not sure if this is standard practice, and I'll have to find out more information about it. But if it is, I like Coach Summerall's attitude toward it, where it has no place in college football. I mean, college football is tainted enough with the money that's going around, and it's just slimy for coaches to hang around, supposedly coaching a team to get ready for a bowl game and recruiting them to leave that school as soon as that bowl game's over with. I mean, it's just a scumbag move. And I think Coach Fritz, to me, in my eyes, is going to be looked upon as not the most classiest guy in the world. Well, I know everybody loves Tulane. They loved Fritz. He was a class act. He said all the right things. But actions speak louder than words. So, you know, I know what he said, and I know how he acted. But once he got out of here and headed to Houston, he dog cussed his former team, his former university, and he kind of left, like I said, he left those assistant coaches behind to recruit for him. Now, I will change my mind on him if he comes out with a public statement, either apologizing or saying he does not condone what they did. And therefore, he's not going to keep those coaches in Houston. To me, that will make up for this. But for right now, he just looks like another scumbag coach to me. All right, be right back. Talk about LSU and Jaden Daniels winning that Heisman Trophy. Welcome back to Fazano Football. All right, Jaden Daniels becomes the third overall Heisman Trophy winner in LSU history, the second in the last 4 years, as he squeaks by runner-up Michael Penix, or was it Bo Nix? One of the two, I can't remember. But who cares? But the thing about it is, I have not seen such an uproar about a Heisman Trophy winner since I've been watching this thing. People just not giving Jaden Daniels his due. But it doesn't surprise me. Most of the criticism comes from the West Coast, Northwest, where a lot of Washington fans and Pac-12 fans live, and writers, mostly writers. And from the Midwest, where I guess Marvin Harrison was the favorite up there. And I'm seeing some national guys. I actually heard these words. This is why you cannot listen or respect any voice just because they talk sports. And they may have even played it before. Doesn't mean they understand it. And then, I mean, they know what the hell they're looking at. And it doesn't mean that they can't be objective and put their own bias and fandom aside. I heard these guys on Fox Sports Radio, three guys, or maybe it was two guys and a girl. And they were saying how Jaden Daniels shouldn't have won the Heisman because LSU finished with a 9-3 record. Now, if LSU finished with a 9-3 record and Jaden Daniels had half the stats that he has now, well, yeah, he wouldn't even been considered. But the fact that he was considered as a Heisman Trophy candidate on a team that lost three games tells you, explains to you how much He deserved winning the trophy. It's easy for a quarterback to guide his team to a 9-3 season if the team is balanced and you have a great running back you just hand the ball off to and he gains 1,500 yards and you have a great defense who holds teams, whose defensive scoring holds teams to 20 points or less a game or 15 or 14 or less a game. Or if you have a great special teams who blocks punts, returns kicks, the whole 9 yards. LSU had zero of those. They didn't have one premier running back. They had nothing on special teams except a halfway decent field goal kicker. No return game. And they had the worst defense in the history of LSU. Worst defense. Gave up. While LSU averaged about 40 points a game, they gave up about 30-plus. When you look at teams in the Southeast Conference, Ole Miss, Alabama, just go down the line, Missouri. So give me a break and put them crocodile tears back inside your eye sockets, butthurt fans and writers and unknowledgeable. Oh, I forgot. These are what the guys from the Fox said. Well, I don't think Jaden Daniels deserved it. Even though he had great numbers, his team just didn't win enough. Okay, this is not a team award. It's an individual award. Okay, so let's scratch that off the list. And one guy said, you know, his defense was pretty, it was the worst defense ever. And I get that. But still, I don't think he should have won it. Well, you acknowledge the fact that they had the worst defense. It wasn't bad, dude. It was historically bad. It was the worst defense they've ever had, considering what they had on the offensive side of the ball. And you just shove it aside because you know why? Your guy did not win. You don't understand it. And this dude's got a national radio show. National. This is why I have zero respect for sports writers, sports announcers, sports radio talk show hosts, most of them. Now, I know there's a bunch that I do respect, but these idiots who come on the radio and spew that kind of nonsense are the ones we all knew in school who had zero athletic ability, never got picked for the team, looked at sports as something that's keen and neat, and wouldn't that be fun to cover? Without having any understanding of what happens in there. Doesn't even know how a team wins a football game. There's offense and there's defense and there's special teams. LSU had one good unit out of those three, and they had an unbelievably special quarterback who lifted that team, put it on his skinny shoulders, and carried him to 9 victories, and I doubt if he plays in a bowl game. And he got the Heisman Trophy, and he deserved it. So guess what? You may not think he deserved it, but you're in the minority because the majority of voters did think he deserved it. So kiss his purple and gold ass. You know, knowledge, dumbass sports writers and reporters. All right, be right back. Talk about the Saints. All right, welcome back to Pisano Football. Talked about Jaden Daniels winning that Heisman and about Coach Willie Fritz moving to Houston and leaving behind a little soap scum around the ring of the tub, if you know what I mean. All right, now let's get back to the Saints, or let's start with the Saints and that win over that powerhouse Carolina Panthers. They play in Charlotte, but you know what I mean. All right, Well, I mean, in a game that couldn't get any uglier, the Saints prevailed 28-6. You know, defensive battle, I guess, or it's just the result of two absolute atrocious offenses. Carolina's offense is awful. Bryce Young is going through a typical rookie season we used to see with quarterbacks when they got drafted this high. They give him a little leeway. It's going to be tough, I think, for him to have the success, say, of a C.J. Stroud just because of his stature. Not even 5'11". I think he's 5'10". He's slight at about 185 pounds, if he's that much. He's got good agility and athletic ability, but in the NFL, where accuracy means so much more than being a quarterback at Alabama when you threw to wide, wide open receivers and two wide open NFL receivers playing against college DBs and safeties. So the windows are smaller, tighter. You got to get rid of the ball quicker. You don't have the advantage of being quicker and faster than NFL, even defensive linemen, certainly not linebackers or safeties. So it's going to be a struggle for Bryce Young, and I thought it would be, as it is for any quarterback from coming out of Alabama. Every now and then you see your Tua's, but I mean, listen, Tua in Miami's putting up some big time numbers, but he is being coached nonstop, 24/7. And that's what you got to do with somebody like Tua, who relied on what Bryce Young relied on when he was at Alabama. Athletic ability, being able to scramble against lower level competition and throwing a wide open receivers. Now, one thing Tua has over Bryce Young is he's extremely accurate with the ball, and he's got a good enough NFL arm. I don't think Bryce Young has an NFL arm that's even average, slightly below average. So having said all that, that's what the Saints defense faced. And he's added to that is a bad offensive line with no threat on that wide receiver. And Carolina's basically a one-sided football team. And that's the defense, who's pretty good. Their defense is pretty good, and they're playing well considering they're now 1-12. And Saints need them to be really good this week because I think they play Tampa, who the Saints are tied with first place in the NFC South. So, I mean, just to show you how bad, well, I'm going to go back 2 weeks, just to show you how god-awful the loss to Atlanta was. They lost to Tampa at home. And Tampa's trying to tank. But teams like Atlanta and the Saints and Carolina won't let them. So you can say, as an athlete, as a franchise, we're tanking. But once athletic men get on the field and that competitive spirit takes over, they want to win that game. Nothing matters but winning that game. Doesn't matter what your record is, what place you are in the standings. And you have a coach in Todd Bowles who needs wins, just like Dennis Allen. He needs to stack W's. Because Bowles is in just as much trouble in Tampa as Allen is in New Orleans. Both teams, maybe Bowles even more, because he had Tom Brady his first season. He had Tom Brady there for Brady's second season. And I think he had him for 2 years, and now he doesn't have Brady, and, you know, Tampa is, you know, they go back to being what they were. So I'm saying all this, and I'm not even talking about the game, because the game wasn't that great. Saints had a great fake block punt, which was later ruled a fumble and returned for a touchdown. Okay, whatever. And they got some breaks late. I think Carolina went 4th on 4th down. inside the 20, and the Saints scored a touchdown late, and Derek Carr and Pete Carmichael and Dennis Allen have discovered this tight end by the name of Jimmy Graham. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's played in the red zone the last 2 weeks, and all he's doing is scoring touchdowns. And the Saints, either he's scoring a touchdown or the Saints are scoring touchdowns because Jimmy Graham in the red zone demands more than one player set of eyes on him. So, what took him so long to realize it? He was a healthy scratch for most of the season. He was not hurt. And the Saints, I think they figured, well, we have Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau. And those two guys, Morrow's a good little tight end. He'll get you some blocking in, and he's not a lead tight end. He's not a threat at tight end. And Johnson has been a disappointment, let's face it. He drops too many passes. And he doesn't block well enough to be able to put up with some of his drops. So Jimmy Graham needs to play more, especially in the red zone. And I'm thinking, why even wait for that? I mean, get him in there. He's creating open space, if you remember, right? He's not just creating cramped spaces in the end zone. The guy is really, really good on the entire field. So, hey, a win is a win. You didn't lose to Carolina, so that's something. And the stadium, the dome, was maybe half full against Carolina. Now, Carolina's playing so poorly that nobody traveled from Charlotte to watch the game. They don't travel well anyway, but especially a 1-11 Carolina team. So that's something, so it wasn't a sea of blue like it was in Detroit, but Detroit's in first place in their division, and they made a nice little weekend out of coming to New Orleans and watching the Lions beat the Saints, and they took over the stadium. So the Giants coming up, the Saints have the Giants, and another backup quarterback. This time it's Tommy DeVito, who actually, I think the Giants are playing better since DeVito took over than they were when Daniel Jones was quarterback. But here again, the Giants are in the shape, pretty much the same shape the Saints are in. They paid Daniel Jones all this money, and his backup's looking better than him. And the Giants are surging. Saints are 6-7. Giants are 5-8. They're not out of the playoff picture. So everyone looking at the Saints schedule, and I'm raising my hand a few weeks ago, saying, oh, this is going to be fine. The Saints have Atlanta coming up, and Carolina, and the Giants, and blah, 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 blah. But guess what? It's not a cinch, this Giant game. As a matter of fact, I'm a little nervous about it as a Saints fan, because I know how the Saints play in games like this. Any team with a good defense is going to give the Saints trouble, and the Giants have a good, not great defense, but it's good, because the Saints can't score points. And the Saints' offense are going to keep every damn team in the game because they're so inept at scoring. You think the Giants are going to go three quarters with just 6 points, two field goals? No, I don't think that. I don't think that's going to happen one bit. The Giants have a really good head coach who knows what the hell he's doing. Not an interim coach who's taken over somebody who just got fired, like Carolina. So he knows how to game plan for the Saints. And I think they'll be ready. I think Saquon Barkley's still playing. I think he's healthy. the Giants have good talent at wide receiver. So the Saints are going to be in for a ball game. They're going to have their hands full Sunday. I can't guarantee. Now, if the Saints were playing the Giants from 2 months ago, September, October, I'd say, yeah. This should be an easy win. Should be. But you can't. The thing I've learned this season, and since Dennis Allen has taken over as head coach of the Saints, is you can't just take a W for granted. You can't look at the schedule and just check off wins like you could when Peyton and Breeze were at the helm. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Should I pick the Saints? I don't know. Do you want to pick the Saints? Do you want them to win out and make the playoffs, lose in the first round, or lose eventually? They're not going to the Super Bowl, which is the only reason to make the playoffs if you feel like you have a legit chance to go into the Super Bowl. And the Saints don't. There's no way in how they're going to beat a Dallas, a San Francisco, or a Philadelphia. None. Zero. Not even a chance. So forget about going to the Super Bowl. Making the playoffs can be a goal, but do you really want to make the playoffs with a team that's struggling in a bad, bad division? I mean, it's like my boy Eric Asher likes to say, it's fool's gold. Because you're making the playoffs, but you're not good. And what happens? To make the playoffs this season, the Saints have to win a division. And when you win a division, you automatically, no matter what your record is, get slotted as a division winner in the draft. So you're starting off at least in the 20th spot, if I'm not mistaken, as opposed to maybe 10, 11, or 12. That's one thing. And next year, you get hit with a first-place schedule, which means it's going to be a tough schedule. This was the easiest schedule in the history of scheduling. For the Saints. Easiest schedule the Saints ever had on paper. But the Saints didn't take advantage of it. So, if you went out and win a division, all you got to show for it is playing a first place schedule next year and losing about 10 spots in the draft. So, do you want them to win? I mean, I want them to win, but I don't know if I want them to win. Because of that. But you, when the game starts, as a fan and as a competitor, you want them to win. I don't ever go into a game hoping the Saints lose, but I'll put to you this way. If the Saints win, great. That means they're that much closer to winning a division, and the Saints put a banners in the dome for division champ, winning a division. And you get a home playoff game, which isn't saying much nowadays, but at least you get to play at home. So there's that. But if they lose, like, okay, they lost. All right. You know, now they won't win the division and won't make the playoffs. So there's that. And then so next year they'll get an easier schedule on paper. Not that they'll do anything about it, but they'll have a better slotted position in the draft. So I don't know. I want the Saints to win. I'm gonna call the Saints a win. The Saints will win. I called them beating Carolina last week. And so whatever. I'm an idiot. I'm nuts. I'm going to say the Saints come out Sunday and play their best game of the year and win. Beat the Giants. How about that? 14-11. No, 11-8. The Saints will win 11-8. They're going to get a field goal and a touchdown, a two-point conversion. They're oddly good at two-point conversions this season. Look it up. So. All right, that's going to wrap up this week's edition of Fasano Football. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoy bringing it to you, and we'll talk again soon.